Hello and welcome to episode 69 of A Little Bird Told Me, the freelance writing podcast that tells you all the tricks of the trade. You can find us on the web at alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com, and from there you can find links to subscribe whether you're a fan of iTunes, RSS feeds or Stitcher Smart Radio. Do make sure you subscribe, of course, because that way you'll be the first to hear when we've got a new episode out. On our Podomatic homepage, you can find the link to our Facebook page, and you definitely want to like us on there because we share all kinds of interesting and relevant news and blog posts, and just helpful pointers for freelance writers, really. We also take requests for subjects that you'd like to hear covered, so come and have a nosy. We're on Facebook, and it's facebook.com/freelancewritingpodcast, so nice and simple. I am Laurie Hartshorn, and this week it's my belated solo episode. Now, I do apologise for the lateness. I've been struck down, as you might be able to hear, with a stinking awful cold, and I've been sniffing and slurping my way to recovery, and we just didn't think you needed to hear that. So we decided it would be better to wait for a week and come back to you more hale and hearty, which I am indeed. Now, in this episode, I'm going to be tackling a topic brought up by one of our loveliest listeners, Annie. Now, Annie is a talented writer, and she has written a fiction manuscript. And in her ongoing quest to find an editor for her work, she has come across lots of big bumps in the road. Now, what Annie is asked to know more about is finding and hiring decent freelancers, especially editors. Now, it's not simple, so we thought it would be a really good topic for a podcast, which explains why it is. So that's what we're going to talk about today. As regular listeners will know, I do hire writers and other freelancers very regularly in the course of running my business, so I'm going to share a few tips and tricks that will hopefully help you to avoid or at least identify some of the pitfalls that I've previously plummeted into, because nobody's perfect, you know, we all learn from experience. And yeah, I've fallen into a few pits. So firstly, why might you want to hire out? If you're looking to hire a freelance writer, it may be because you're too busy, but you still want to grow your business and take on more work, or you just really need to fulfill some client commitments and you've maybe overbooked yourself a little bit. Alternatively, it might be because you've got a large volume of one kind of work, and you'd rather be focusing on another kind, so you might have 10 blog articles a week to write, when really what you want to get into is writing website copy. If you're looking for a freelance editor, it's probably because you've written a longer piece of work, and you know, hint hint, how vital it is to get it professionally edited. But, big but, there's no point in outsourcing work if you can't find the right freelancer, because you end up paying for poor work or no work at all and doing most of it yourself. So what I'm going to look at now is where to hunt out decent writers and editors, where these people are hiding. First option, word of mouth. Now, this is always the best. It's not always an option, but it is always the best option, I think. Remember, though, if somebody recommends someone to you, it may be because it's a friend of theirs. And it's worth checking whether this is the case. Often if somebody sees that you're looking for, say, an editor, and they know somebody who is, or who calls themselves an editor, they'll make the connection and they'll put you in touch to be helpful, which is fab. But being somebody's friend doesn't make you good at your job. Now, from experience, we can give friends the thumbs up through loyalty, or just a moment's helpfulness as described before, without really knowing whether they're actually good at their job, because who does? Who keeps track of their friend's work, really, unless you actually work with them or closely aligned with them? It may be that you've never really asked and you just assume that they are, which is fair enough, or it could be that you don't know much about, say, book editing, and you know, you think they sound like they know what they're talking about, but you don't know book editing anyway, so really, who knows? So if somebody does recommend a friend to you, that's great, but don't be afraid to have a quiet, confidential word with them, and just ask whether they've had any direct experience of that person's work. Now, they probably haven't, unless they're a freelance writer as well, so you should research that freelancer just like you would anybody else. If what you find is good, check in with them again just like you would with a stranger. Now, if they don't have the right credentials, or, you know, you don't like the way they communicate, or their emails are full of typos, or if you just don't click with them for whatever reason, don't be swayed by the fact that they're the friend of a friend. There may be, let's be honest, there may be a little bit of disappointment either on their part or on your friend's part if you decide not to hire that person. But just be tactful about it. If they're not right for the job, they're not right for the job. But, you know, word of mouth can be a really good way to find somebody decent. You know, I've recommended people to others. Pip's recommended people to me. Build up your network. Build up your network of freelance writers. Social media can be brilliant for doing this. And ask about, you know, because if somebody's hired someone and had a really good result, then go ahead. Go ahead and have a look at that person. It doesn't necessarily make them the right person for you, but it certainly makes them an all right freelancer. So the second way to go about looking for a freelance writer or editor online is to proactively advertise on social media and your website. Now, this is how I've ended up hiring a lot of the writers that I outsource to. If you're running a freelance writing business and you decide to outsource to another freelancer, you're not their employer, you're their client. But that's not to say that you can't benefit from some of the aspects of traditional job descriptions and put out a call for applications. And while a CV, covering letter, and examples of work won't necessarily tell you everything that you need to know about somebody, it can certainly help you to weed out unsuitable candidates and attract the attention of some decent ones. A good way to put out a call for applications, as I say, is to post an unlinked page on your website. Just a page somewhere at the back. Don't need to link to it from the homepage or any other page. You just need to have the URL to hand. Now, on that page, put up a clear brief of what you're looking for. You can then link to this page across your social media channels, and people are usually very good when it comes to retweeting offers of paid work. So you probably find that you do get a good response as long as you're posting a job with a decent wage, which, if you know me and Pip, you'll know is a must. Now, invite applicants to email you whatever documents you'd like to see from them. I usually go for a CV, covering letter, and examples of work, as I mentioned above. Now, if you're anything like me, you'll probably be surprised by, well, not surprised anymore, but initially, surprised by the number of people who don't read the ad properly and send ridiculous applications. But just think, if you hadn't had these applications from people and you hadn't seen how shoddy they were, you could have just encountered them across, you know, other channels, and you would never have known. So if someone doesn't read the ad properly, or if they send you a shoddy covering letter, or even if you just don't like their style or approach, or, you know, that there are typos in the email, this can save you a lot of time when it comes to narrowing down your search for the perfect freelancer. And I say perfect, of course that doesn't actually exist, but you know what I mean. You want to find somebody that you can communicate with and who's going to be a good match for your needs and personal style. Now, just a quick note on this. If you are requesting personal information from people, you aren't under any legal obligation, at least that I'm aware of, to treat it nicely. When they send you something by email, that's their risk. However, for the sake of human decency and just not being a toad, you absolutely should ensure that you treat people's information with respect and discretion. Let's say you get an incredibly awful, horrifically bad application from someone, and you really probably will. I mean, I have. I've had absolutely hilariously awful applications from people. You might want to laugh about it with your friends. You might want to have a good lull with your mates. Now, at the end of the day, everybody's got to have a bit of a giggle sometimes. So go ahead and do that, but make sure that, one, you do it in private, and two, you do it without giving away any information that could identify the person, because your lull's not more important than someone else's feelings. So same goes for the documents themselves. If you know you're not going to be interested in hiring somebody, finish your lols, and the best thing to do is just delete the details from your system, delete the CV. It's just neater, nicer, and all around more decent. The third way to find decent writers and editors is to go and have a nosy on freelancing websites. Now, Pip and I can both be quite cynical when it comes to certain freelancing websites. They're a hotbed of exploitation a lot of the time, and they're populated by clients who don't care about freelancers. You know, particularly when it comes to bidding for work, they can be an absolute battlefield. It's like the Hunger Games for freelancers often. You know, you get freelancers desperately fighting against one another to offer the lowest price, and it's you know, ridiculously low in some cases, and just win any project possible. And it can be tough for buyers as well to see past the temptation of low prices. I mean, we all know that freelance writers deserve a decent wage for their work, of course, particularly when they've got lots and lots of skills. However, in a freelancing website environment, it can be quite easy to get a little bit greedy and decontextualize. It can be like going into a supermarket and seeing loads of super, super bargains and then trying to convince yourself not to opt for them. Now, it's tough. You know, and when you're outsourcing, you don't necessarily have a lot of money to play with. You might well be taking whatever fee you're prepared to pay from the fee that you're getting from your client. And let's be honest, everybody needs to make a profit. Otherwise, you'd just be working for free. That being said, opting for the cheapest freelancers, and my God, you can get some really cheap ones, will often get you the worst results. It's not always that you get what you pay for, but if it's a question of outsourcing because you're up to your neck in work this week, I've found that it's often better to miss out on the big profit margin and to just go for a decently priced freelancer, pay them a fair wage, and you'll be better off, really, as well as more decent. Because one, you'll have to do less to the piece of work when you get it, hopefully, and two, you'll be keeping your client happy and gaining more business from them by getting a good piece of work across to them rather than something cheap that's going to turn them off. Now, two sites that I've used are Elance and People Per Hour. On Elance, I've put out job ads and opted for moderately priced freelancers who have really good ratings. Now, you can't guarantee that somebody's going to suit your needs, but you've got a better chance of finding someone reliable if you opt for somebody with a generous number of positive reviews. Now, as before, you need to make sure that you think carefully about what you're after, both in terms of work that you need doing and the kind of person that you'd like to do that work. With freelancing sites being as they are, you are likely to get a huge number of vastly unsuitable applications. Lots of people and companies on freelancing sites treat applications as a numbers game. They will just apply for everything. So you need to be clear in your ad and shortlist applications from people who address the points that you request. Now, in your ad, you might want to specify that you prefer freelancers who are full-time. That way you can perhaps avoid people who just do a bit of freelancing on the side and who might not be as available as you would need them to be. You might want only freelancers who have experience in writing about or editing pieces of work about a certain topic. You might want to consider only applications from within your own country so that you don't face problems with payment or problems with spelling conventions and a lack of cultural knowledge. You know, it would usually be more challenging, for example, for an American freelancer to write something that follows UK style and spelling conventions. Likewise, if you're looking for an editor who's familiar with the Chicago Manual of Style, you're more likely to have some success in the US than in the UK. Now, all these filters are possible on Elance, so it's worth having a really clear think about what you want and making that obvious in your ad. I use People Per Hour somewhat differently to Elance. What I tend to do on that site is purchase what's called an hourly from freelancers on there. Now, these are set fee tasks that the freelancers themselves have outlined and put an offer for that specific price. And it just seems a little bit fairer sometimes. It removes the need for the whole bidding war application thing. It's more straightforward. And you pay in advance, that money goes into an escrow account, and you release the funds when the work's complete and you're happy with it. So what you can do is browse the site for what you need, say, I don't know, 500 word blog post about the UK finance sector. You then purchase the hourly and send over a brief on the site to the freelancer. Now, it's not necessarily a suitable method for finding people to fulfil larger or more bespoke tasks, but it is a quick and efficient way to get a small fixed fee job done. And like Elance, you can also post job ads on People Per Hour and take bids that way, and the fees on the site tend to be a bit higher and therefore a bit fairer than those on Elance, but they're definitely not prohibitively high. So that's sort of a quick look at where to look. Now, what do you do when you found somebody that you think might be a good match? Now, there's no saying whether that person's going to be the perfect person for you or whether they're going to turn out to be a bit of a nightmare. So the best way to protect your interests when hiring a freelancer is to put written agreements in place. Now, these won't always protect you. After all, it's unlikely that you're going to chase somebody through the courts if they fail to uphold their end of the bargain. But written agreements can just offer an extra layer of security and clarity about expectations on both sides, particularly if you're not hiring via a protected platform like a freelancing website. You know, as I said before, when you hire via something like People Per Hour, you put the money in an escrow account, and if there are any disputes that arise, you've got the customer service team who will intervene. And, you know, it's not always super fair, I've found. But, you know, it means that your money is at least in an escrow account rather than in somebody's international tax-free account as they run off to the Bahamas. Now, I use a contract that I have adapted from a template that I found online, and I'll pop a link to that in the show notes. It covers issues like deadlines, fees, part payment, non-submission of work, what Americans call tardiness. Do you like that? Tardiness. So tardy. You know, and while it's written from the perspective of you being the freelancer, and obviously you can also use it that way when dealing with your own clients, I use it when outsourcing work to other people. As with a written agreement, it is important to be clear in your communications as well. So, and it's always best to get things in writing. So if you have a phone call with somebody, it's always good to follow up by email, even if you just say something like, "Hey X, following our call, this is just to confirm, blah blah, bullet points, thanks and best wishes." You know, because then you know what's expected, when it was agreed, and precisely what both parties are set to gain. Specifically about hiring an editor, it's important to find somebody who not only has the right experience and credentials for the job, but who communicates consistently well, because these projects tend to go on a bit longer than, say, a blog post or a piece of writing. The last thing you want to do is hire an editor and then they just drop off the radar with your manuscript when you need to talk to them. And that leaves you worried and it leaves you fretting, and it's just no fun for anybody. That being said, do try to bear in mind what it's like to be a freelancer. It can be weirdly easy, despite being a freelance writer, it can be weirdly easy to start micromanaging people without realising and sort of, you know, getting down their neck and not letting them get on with their job because you're worried about stuff. And that's one more reason to make sure that you've thought everything through thoroughly before you get started, so you don't think of something, I don't know, 3 days in and go, "Oh, actually, freelancer, I need to talk about this." You know, they've already got started. So try to outline deadlines that you can check in with that person on along the way. Say, have a deadline for the first run through of chapter one by X date, and then a catch up 3 chapters later, then another 3 chapters later, or you might prefer to have a final estimated or actual deadline and check in with your editor weekly at an agreed time until then. It's best to make your expectations clear when you're still hiring. You know, you don't necessarily have to pop them in your job description, although I suppose it wouldn't hurt. But you need to make it clear early on so that you can find somebody who'll be happy with what you're proposing and someone equally that you'll be happy with. Now, the same goes for the payment schedule. You need to identify points at which you're willing to pay for the work you're getting. And sadly, you can't really do pay nothing now for 5 years and then just pay them everything somewhere down the line. You've got to be quite fair. Sadly, so some freelancers might request funds up front. This is quite usual. Others will be more lenient and accept 100% of the funds on completion. That's slightly more unusual in my experience. Alternatively, this tends to happen quite a lot from what I've seen. You might want to pay chapter by chapter or every 3 chapters, whatever works for the pair of you, but make sure that you do discuss it clearly. If it's the first time that you've hired an editor, it's worth going around and just doing a bit of research. Have a look for editors online. Talk to any editors that you know. See what they say on their websites about payments. Have a look on LinkedIn, see if there are any editors on there, and then click through to their website. Just do a bit of nosying. You know, editors might be willing to be flexible. I've edited a number of manuscripts, and I've accepted both chapter-by-chapter payment, and a 50% down payment and 50% afterwards payment, and that was on the basis that there was a written agreement specifying that the client was entitled to the editing work and 2 rounds of minor amends, and I felt sufficiently protected by that. So even with the best will in the world and all this planning, things can sadly go pear-shaped. Now, unfortunately, in the world of freelancing, as you'll know if you've been in it a while, or you'll soon know if you've just started, there's often not much of a safety net when things go wrong, and that is just the honest truth. It costs a lot more than most of us have to hand to pursue somebody through the courts if they let you down, and it's often just not worth it. You know, you'd pay hundreds of pounds to pursue a civil claim over here, you know, and if somebody owes you £100, you just have to grit your teeth sometimes and learn from your mistakes or the other person's mistakes. Sometimes you've done everything right and you get bitten on the bum anyway. Now, the only prevention for situations like this really is planning. As I say, so set out your expectations clearly from the word go. Only go with freelancers that you're comfortable with. Communicate clearly with them in writing along the way. Choose a payment schedule that you're comfortable with and they're comfortable with. And try to ensure that you're opting for a freelancer with positive prior experience, whether that's a recommendation from another writer that you trust, or positive reviews and a good rating on a freelancing website. Have a look at your freelancer's online persona. Don't be afraid to go digging and ask any questions, professional ones, obviously. Is their website decent? Do they look like they take their job seriously? Are there typos on their website? Do they have a professional-looking social media presence? You can make judgment calls on people based on this information, and it's not a question of, you know, giving people the benefit of the doubt. You want to hire somebody that you trust will do a good job. If you're already in preliminary communications with the person, are the documents that they've sent over well set out? You know, is the CV decent? Does the covering letter address the points that you mentioned in the ad? Do they sound like they know what they're talking about? What qualifications and experience do they have? Do they have a portfolio you can look at? Do they have previous clients you can chat to? The last thing you want to do is risk your time, money, and project on a hobbyist or on an unprofessional freelancer. And sadly, just as there are loads and loads and loads of really decent freelancers, there are loads of really, really crappy ones. Now, I've had my fingers burnt a number of times previously, and sadly, it's usually from giving people the benefit of the doubt, which has taught me to harden up. So I'm extra careful now to be very thorough when I hire people, and I'm quick to let somebody go if they're taking the piss. Now, this taking the piss, what does that include? For me, that includes handing in work that contains multiple typos. I'm willing to let one or two go now and then, but I'm talking riddled with typos. Sentences that don't make sense, work that's not been proofread, work that's been handed in late, poor communication or no communication, not following the brief, poor research. The transaction, and that's what it is, has to be a fair one. I have to pay fairly for a piece of work, and I have to pay promptly for a piece of work, and I have to make sure that the freelancer that I hire has what they need from me, both in terms of physical stuff like notes and documents, and in not-so-physical stuff like time and communication if they need anything clarifying. I can't just set somebody to work and then bugger off for the weekend and leave them to it. You know, they might need something from me. But in return, I expect a job really well done. Now, I'm hoping that doesn't sound harsh. I'm hoping that just sounds sensible. You would think all this kind of stuff was obvious, but from experience it's not. You do get some absolute ridiculous people. If I sound a bit harsh, I'm really not trying to. You know, I assure you that I'm not some kind of evil taskmistress cracking the whip on people. You know, I have a number of freelancers whom I work with regularly, not to mention the lovely Pip, who's a trusted colleague rather than someone I outsource to. You know, so I can't be all bad. And I do my best to treat my freelancers, it makes them sound like pets, to treat my freelancers as I'd want to be treated. I feed them 3 times a day, take them for walks, things like that. I pay fairly and I pay on time. I communicate clearly. I make myself very available for queries and questions. You know, every time I email somebody, I do reiterate, feel free if you have any questions. I'm around all day, or I'm around in the morning. I'm not here in the afternoon, but I'll be back tomorrow. You know, things like that. Unfortunately, the problem is because it's so easy to set up as a hobbyist to make a bit of cash on the side as a so-called freelancer, loads of people do it. And because literacy rates can vary enormously, less than suitable writers, shall we say, might get away with handing over mediocre or frankly crappy work to clients who might not notice, they might not know better. You know, a lot of businesses are owned by people who aren't necessarily very academic. You know, they've worked their way up. They've maybe started in the family business at the age of 15, so they can't tell what's good grammar and what isn't. You know, they've got business savvy, they don't have linguistic savvy. As a freelance writer, though, typos, spelling, grammar mistakes, poor paragraphing, all those kinds of things stand out like a sore thumb. So it can be easy to feel like being really harsh on somebody if you think that their work isn't up to scratch, you know, but they've had good reviews elsewhere. But remember, you're not a charity. If somebody's work isn't right, it isn't right. Now, you have to be fair and allow for subjectivity in some cases. like maybe you wouldn't have phrased something in the same way that your freelancer has, that doesn't make them wrong or a crappy freelancer. But if they are just plain wrong, and they're plain wrong in a number of places, whether that's actually within the work or in terms of customer service, then you're within your rights to identify the work as subpar and just bring the collaboration to an end, obviously in line with the written agreement that you've got in place. Now, again, from experience, I've had loads, so many entitled freelancers cross my path. Really, really cheeky monkeys. People who think it's outrageous that I expect them to know how to use English grammar, and people who have agreed to write a press release for me without knowing how to write a press release. Oh my God. So sometimes you do just have to clutch your own head and be confident enough to stick by your own decisions and standards. You know, if somebody can't get the difference between it's and it's, or there and there, that's clearly not a good writer. I don't care what they say, I don't care who says what, that's a rubbish writer. You know, once might be a typo. You know, we all do it, we all get tired and we write there instead of there, or it's instead of it's, or you get a rogue apostrophe. But a decent writer will know that that is a stupid mistake. You know, and they'll be mortified if you point it out to them. If somebody pointed out a grammar mistake like that to me, I'd be mortified. I wouldn't be like, oh, God, you know, what's your problem? Oh, which I've had from people, amazingly. So, yeah, you have to be confident enough to stick by your own decisions. And it's not easy sometimes, you know, sometimes you'll feel like you're being this evil, evil person. But I assure you, there are so many crappy freelancers. There are loads and loads of decent ones, don't get me wrong, but there's an unlimited number, it's an infinite number of rubbish people who are trying to make a living by calling themselves a freelance writer, and you may well encounter these people. So if you know they're rubbish, then by all means feel free. If you start to get a bit worried though, and you think like, oh God, I must be really mean, or my standards must be being too high, try and make sure that you have a strong network of fellow freelance writers around you. You already have me and Pip. You know where the Facebook page is. You can always come and test the water with us. But try and make sure that you have freelance writers that you can turn to. As I do with Pip, you know, the number of times we've emailed each other and gone, you know, am I losing the plot here? Am I missing something? Because this to me looks like a terrible piece of work. But this person has a decent rating on X website. And usually, in fact always, thank goodness, touch wood so far, we've been able to support the other person and go, no, you're not wrong. It's heinous, awful work. But it's always good. It is always good to check in with people regularly and make sure that you're not being unreasonable. Because as I said earlier, you know, the temptation to micromanage can be there. Sometimes you lose a bit of, you know, you lose a bit of objectivity. You can think, well, I wouldn't have written it that way. So, you know. Just judgment call. Now, in terms of payments in these cases, I tend to pay for the work that I've had, although there are some clauses in the agreement that I use that reduce the fee for lateness. So if work is a day or two late, for no good reason, the freelancer does get less money. If it's excessively late to the point that I can't use it because my client's deadline's already passed and I've had to pay for someone else to do the work in the meantime, or I've had to do the work myself despite being too busy, the agreement that I have clearly outlines that the fee won't be paid. Now, in reality, I've not actually encountered that much prohibitive lateness. More usually, it's just crappy work. Which usually I'll pay for. You know, I do sometimes think it's a case of buyer beware. So I'll usually pay for it, but I certainly won't rehire the person, and I certainly won't give them a good review. I don't tend to give people horrific reviews. If I'm not happy, I just won't review. Now, for longer tasks like manuscript editing, all this is one good reason to put periodic payments in place. Now, if somebody's edited chapter one and you're really not happy with it, you're probably going to have to pay them for the time and work they've put in, again, unless it's an absolute piss take. But, you know, you should have outlined cases in which you're not willing to pay in your agreement, so that should be covered. But if it's no good, you don't have to go any further with them. You just pay for the work that you've had and call the collaboration to an end. So to sum up, really, hiring somebody is all about preparation and planning. You know, try and find somebody with good, solid footprints, because it won't protect you 100%, but It will help you to try and weed out people who are just rubbish, really. So look for somebody with good reviews. Look for somebody with a recommendation by somebody that you trust. Look for someone who's got a good website, a decent CV, a decent social media presence. Protect yourself and them during the hiring process. Communicate clearly and in writing, and put an agreement in place that can be used as leverage if needs be, but otherwise just outlines what you can both expect to gain from working together. While you are running a business and you do need to put in place and uphold high standards for your work, I suppose I'd end by saying try and bear in mind what it's like to be a freelancer and just be the client that you would want to have, because when you're working with somebody, that can often solve a lot of the problems. Be fair on people and remember to recommend good freelancers when you do find them, because just as rubbish, lazy freelancers should be avoided like horrible zombie people, decent freelancers should be given support. So give them a testimonial if they've done a good job. Write something on their website for them. Give them a rating on the freelancing site. Mention what was great about them. Talk about them on social media. Give them a shout out and help other people to find them too. Because that way, hopefully, decent freelancers will get more and more work and recognition, and the crappy, evil, rubbish freelancers, whom we hate, can just sink to the bottom of the pond and we'll never have to deal with them again, which is basically what we all want. So that brings me to the end of that part of the episode. Hopefully that's a bit of helpful information if you're looking at hiring somebody either to outsource to or somebody to edit a manuscript or a longer piece of work for you. As I say, preparation is key, planning is key. There aren't too many freelance safety nets, unfortunately. So just try and learn from your mistakes, try and learn from my mistakes, and really lay the groundwork before you get involved with somebody and start paying for work. Because unfortunately, there are people out there who will burn your fingers. So just do what you can to protect yourself and other decent freelancers, and you should have a better chance of getting along okay. So that brings us to the fabled, marvellous A Little Bird Told Me recommendation of the week. And this week I have chosen a blog post that has been featured on entrepreneur.com. Now, I don't normally think of freelance writers as entrepreneurs, we're just writers, you know, nothing more, nothing less. It's a perfectly alright thing to be. It's just not really what I think of as an entrepreneur. But entrepreneur.com has articles about running a small business, and that's how I tend to think of my career. You know, I am a freelance writer, but it's a business to me. You know, I have clients, I have people that I outsource to. And even if I didn't have people that I outsource to, I'm still effectively running a business. You know, I have a brand, I have an online presence, I have phone numbers that you can call to talk to me because I'm super exciting, email, all that kind of thing. So, you know, there are some transferable tips and skills between business owners and freelance writers. Now, this article is called The 7 Sins of Newbie Entrepreneurs. And the reason it caught my attention is because recently Pip and I have had quite a number of emails, actually, from listeners of the podcast. You're a shy bunch. You'll talk to us by email, but you don't tend to chat on Facebook, which is interesting. You tend to sneak into our inboxes while no one's looking and ask questions there. So you should come and have a chat with us on Facebook. That's going to be my recommendation for this week. Come and chat to us on Facebook or on Twitter. We're both on there as well. And you can find our handles on our Podomatic page, which is alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com. But back to the 7 sins of newbie entrepreneurs. As I say, we've had a lot of emails recently by people saying, we know you cover a lot of stuff in the podcast, but could you take it back to basics for me on this particular topic? And I think this article is really good for doing that. You know, it talks about kind of pitfalls that you can get yourself into when you're starting out. And actually, the mistakes that it talks about, things like not setting aside enough cash reserves to support yourself, thinking that you have to do everything to try and save money, these are mistakes that tend to carry on, actually. People can have, they might have been freelancing for a few years and they're still making these mistakes. Pricing your product or services too low and high, that's something that everybody we see does. You know, we did 3 episodes in a row last year, I think. I'll link to them in the show notes about how to price yourself how to come up with things like project fees, hourly fees, how to increase your fees, things like that. You know, those episodes are really, really helpful because a lot of people that I see just pluck prices out of the air. And it's how we all start out, weirdly. We just go, okay, I'm going to come up with that as my hourly rate. And it makes no sense because usually you get it wrong because you don't know what you're doing. Not having a growth strategy. Now, you might think, well, I don't particularly want to grow. I just want to be a freelance writer. And that's the position I'm in. I don't want a big business. I would like to just continue on the level that I'm at currently. I'm happy with the level that I work at now. But it's important to know where you want to be in 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, because it helps you to plan things. And if you can plan things, you can strategize. And if you strategize, everything just tends to make a bit more sense. You know, you stop being so hit and miss with your marketing and you start building up a decent, reliable, consistent freelance writing business. Actually, Pip and I did an episode similar to that. I think it was the start of 2013. It was on about how to set SMART goals. So I'll link to that in the show notes as well. Because it's just helpful. It's helpful to know what you expect from yourself and your business. And this article on entrepreneur.com, it's got some really good tips on, you know, including things like how to not be overly optimistic during planning, how to properly evaluate your business model, things like that, things that you won't necessarily know, because a lot of us kind of fall into freelance writing, I think. We get into it because we're between work or because we've just finished a degree or because we need a bit of extra money, but then we find that it's going really well, so we shift into freelancing full time. So we're not necessarily business savvy people when we start out. You know, we learn as we go along. And articles like this, I think, are really helpful, especially when they're aimed at newbies, because even if you're not a newbie, you can still make some really basic mistakes and really shoot yourself in the foot. So have a nosy. I'll pop the link to this article, Seven Sins of Newbie Entrepreneurs, in the show notes. And as I say, if you have any questions, Pip and I are always on hand. I'll say always, obviously, midnight, 2 a.m, we're not really there, but, you know, regularly we're there. You can come and have a chat with us and the other freelancers who inhabit our lovely Facebook page. So that's facebook.com/freelancewritingpodcast. And that brings us neatly to the end of episode 69 of this marvellous freelance writing podcast. Hopefully you will have found that an interesting and informative and hopefully helpful introduction into how to hire people. Now, it can be a bit of a bear pit, so just take it easy. If you need any questions, you know where Pip and I are. Otherwise, as I say, preparation is key, and hopefully you'll find some decent freelance writers and editors out there. So thank you as ever for listening. Pip and I will be back in a couple of weeks' time for another dual episode. In the meantime, I've been Laurie Hartshorne.